I wouldn't fight Ernest Borgnine dirty.
Well, no, I would want him to take a bath first.
Express.
Yes, that's right. That's who I am. I am Ken Hankey, the senior or senile movie critic for the Mountain Express. And you are...
Justin Sowler.
See, I'm so senile, I can't remember that. My co-critic on the Mountain Express. Mm-hmm. And you put the two of us together and you have what?
I don't want to know.
Oh. Well, for our purposes this evening, you have Elitist Bastards.
Okay.
And as per usual, we have been to the movies, and it wasn't always a pretty sight.
Some were prettier than others.
That's true.
In your case, mine. This might be pound for pound the worst.
Mine got dragged way down by one of them, so...
Excuses aside.
You know, but I take solace in the fact that come Friday, no theater in town has the bad one I sat through.
Okay.
Everyone has dropped it after a week. And it makes me happy.
Something has to.
That's true. So.
Where are we going to start with?
I don't know. If it's not too much to ask, what did you see?
Well, I guess the big winner in the box office this week is Jackass 3D.
Which, appallingly enough, has like a 70% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, something I touched on in my review, and it's mostly based on this New York Times article where someone is once again attempting to make the argument that Jackass is art.
Why? Because Spike Jonze is one of the creators?
Well, they talk about performance art and Buñuel and all of this stuff, and it's comparing it to it. And really, what the conclusion I've drawn at this point is calling Jackass art is just a good excuse to laugh at these people and not feel guilty about it. And partly the Spike Jonze thing, but I think.
And partly the fact that there are an awful lot of critics out there who don't want to be accused of being unhip by not saying that Jackass is hysterically funny.
I am not worried about that. I just thought it was dumb. I think the people in this movie think it's dumb.
Well, that's entirely possible.
I don't think anyone in this thing, other than maybe Spike Jonze, who shows up in one scene, thinks any of this is art.
Well,
I mean, they all seem pretty world-weary at this point.
Well, you have to bear in mind that many years ago, I wrote a review that put forth the theory that if you looked up the word sleazy in the dictionary, you would find Johnny Knoxville's picture. And I have seen nothing to change my mind on this.
Well, that's something that I found interesting with the movie is that it's been 10 years of Jackass TV shows and Jackass
movies. 10 years of jackassery.
And all of these guys look exactly the same. Like, they have it. They look a little older, but they dress the same and they act the same. And it's like the ultimate Arrested Development, like you can see it. Like,
well, I don't really expect a good deal of intellectual growth from Johnny Knoxville.
Well, I mean, what else is he going to be doing with himself? Like,
well, I mean, you know,
his acting career is pretty much.
Well, yeah, that never really went anywhere. I mean, Dukes of Hazzard was not one of the happening
Special
movies
Olympics
of its year.
Movie.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything. So.
No, that's true. So.
So, what choice does he have? Besides giving...
I'm sure he probably has enough money that he could leave us alone, and that would suit me fine.
Yeah, but these people never have enough money.
That's true.
So, it's a Jackass movie. You know if you're going to like it before you go in.
And that's why you went and I didn't.
I didn't know I was going to...
Yeah, but I knew I wasn't going to like it.
I knew I wasn't.
Well, no, but so it was your turn in the barrel.
Okay. say
so. Marcy had the first one. I had the second one. The third one was yours.
Well.
And now you've had the Jackass experience.
I've seen them before.
Well,
so it's not really... No,
that was your own fault then.
Well.
Yeah. I never saw the first one. I'm not going to correct this.
It is in 3D. I don't know if it really adds much. I mean, there's a few scenes that look pretty impressive. But, I mean...
With the possible exception of you referred to exploding diarrhea in your...
Yes.
Is that in 3D?
The whole thing's in 3D.
But is it coming at you?
No.
Oh, well, you see, now that's a missed opportunity.
There's some... The best time the 3D works is when they have, at the beginning and the end of the movie, they have these elaborate explosions of things blowing up that are in slow motion, and the bowl of dildos at one point. It's
wow,
pretty,
a dildo coming at you.
Yeah, okay. A bowl of them.
A bowl, okay.
Yes. Even they have a gun that shoots a dildo.
Isn't there a song like that, Life is Just a Bowl of Dildos?
I think it's something like that.
I think it's something like it, yeah. Before my time, even.
Dildos or the song?
The song.
Okay.
I believe Rudy Valley recorded it about 1930.
It's quite risky of him.
Yeah, well.
It's very progressive.
Yes.
And I guess I will go ahead and talk about
Ahead and talk about Insecure.
Insecure.
Make it clear that is Insecure.
Yes. It's a film that was shot in Memphis by a Memphis-based music producer. And it's obvious it's this... attempt at a Tyler Perry sort of
it's an attempt at a Tyler Perry R-rated film.
Yes, it's there's some murder and mayhem, as they say.
Because Tyler Perry movies have mayhem, but they don't have murder, and they don't have
this one has
four-letter words.
Two murders. And there's some four-letter words. But the whole thing is... It reminds me less of Tyler Perry, besides the fact that there's... Pretty much half the cast has been in a Tyler Perry movie or a Tyler Perry play. The movie is... If you want to compare it to something, it's probably closer to The Room. Which,
to Tommy Wiseau.
Yes, which everyone pretty much knows as... Maybe the worst...
Ultimate bad movie experience.
Most incompetent movie. It's not... quite, it doesn't have that same charm, but it is almost as bad. Like, it's pretty inept filmmaking. It's made by people that have no right to be making movies. Like,
well, the shocking part about all this is that it's still here come Friday.
Well, good for it. I'm glad.
I don't know why I didn't get the figures on it, but I can't imagine they weren't grim.
Yeah, I would say it didn't. I don't know. Maybe we'll see how word of mouth works.
Yeah, word of mouth will
on this dumb
turn
movie.
It into a cult hit.
I don't, well, it's never as funny as it should be to be
a cult hit.
Yeah, I mean, there's two scenes where I laughed out loud at it. I LOL'd, as the kids say. I did not
LOL.
I did not
LOL in my presence.
No. Well, I did not roll on the floor laughing my ass off. Which is probably the distinction.
I followed you upstairs and I knew that. It's true.
So. Yeah, it's just bad. The main actor, Cordell Moore, I believe is his name.
You saw it, not me.
He is awful. Like, he's been in Tyler Perry plays. I have no idea how he passed an audition for anything. I've seen high school plays with better acting. I've seen elementary school plays with better acting.
I've seen some Tyler Perry movies where I can understand how he could have gotten into one of the plays.
I don't think you understand how bad he is in this. I don't think you're ever going to.
No, because I'm not going to go see
it. Maybe I'll try and find some clips for you so you can get an idea.
All right. That'll do.
It's maybe the worst acting
I've
ever seen.
There's certainly no support for this film out there. There aren't even any stills available for this thing.
Yeah, it's on their site.
Oh, on their site?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just had to do some digging.
I went digging on their site.
Well.
And tracing me.
Wow. I will
they
get
haven't
you
gotten
some.
Anybody...
They're all really bad stills, too. It's like, why did you pick...
Well, they haven't managed to get any to Rotten Tomatoes or the IMDb. So,
well, they haven't even managed to get shills on IMDb.
Well, that's
There are three message board threads, and each of them are saying how awful this movie looks. There's not one person going, this was great.
Perhaps they don't understand how this is done.
They haven't really.
Yeah,
they don't. They don't understand even how to promote
a piece of crap.
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right. So we've gotten through that.
Well, I got through that.
Well, we've gotten through.
You've heard me talk about it.
That's true.
But where do you want to start? I want your money.
No. I think we should probably save that. I think that's. Okay. You know, we've spent enough time right now talking about
bad movies,
the Second World War Nazi atrocity of motion pictures. So instead, let's go to the magnificently competent Red.
Okay. Which is not Reds.
It's not Reds, it's Red. It stands for Retired Extremely Dangerous. If you've seen the trailer, you've pretty much seen the movie. It's magnificently competent. If what you're after is watching Helen Mirren fire really big guns, you will get that. You got it in the trailer, so you know you're going to get it. You'll get even more of it in this. Everybody's very good in it. I mean, not really. Morgan Freeman is in an autopilot role, and it's also the smallest of the. All the quirky stuff is pretty much handed over to John Malkovich. Bruce Willis, however, I will have to say, does manage to. It kind of makes you remember why you like Bruce Willis.
Right.
Because he's just, like, effortlessly charming and seems like a nice guy under the hard-ass demeanor. In fact, that's actually addressed by Helen Mirren's character. She has she's fine for what she does, and she has kind of a peculiar romance with Brian Cox during the course of the film. The biggest thing is the film will not surprise you at any given point. Okay. It is exactly what was advertised. It delivers exactly that. And nothing more. And with that cast, it ought to deliver a hell of a lot more than that. But the script's not there, and the direction's not there.
But it has the names.
It has the names. So. And a really spry 93-year-old Ernest Borgnine. Well, I have to say, I am impressed by.
Cattle prong.
No, I mean, he moves better than I do.
No.
Of course, so do most people, so that's, he's got almost 40 years.
So you
years
would not
on.
Fight Ernest Borgnine, is what you're saying.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I think maybe if I knocked him down, he probably might have trouble getting up. But
could you knock him down?
If I cheated?
Okay.
Yeah. So.
I wouldn't fight Ernest Borgnine dirty.
Well, no, I would want him to take a bath first. Heavens. Plebeian notions you have. All right.
What else?
Well,
what else did you watch?
What else did I watch? Well, I watched.
Never Let Me Go?
I watched Never Let Me Go, which.
I've heard is incredibly depressing.
It is very good. It is far and away the best thing I saw this week. It is beautifully made, it's thought provoking, it's wonderfully well acted. And it's perhaps the most depressing movie I saw all year. And that, I think, is the problem with it. And I think that's going to be a problem with it at the box office. That's why it's what you would call underperformed. But the thing about it is, it's like, do you want to go invest 2 hours in something that is going to make you feel like, grabbing the razor blade on your way out? I mean, and almost you feel like it should come with complimentary cyanide pills because it's just like, it really is bleak.
Right.
It's really good bleak. It's a dystopian science fiction story about these children who are being raised for body parts. And that's all they're there for. Of course, they don't know that's all they're there for part of the movie. Apparently in the novel, you don't know that's all they're there for. The movie pretty much tips its hand early on that they are organ donors. They are cloned organ donors. And they have no futures. They grow up and get carved on, and after a certain number of donations, they die. Bleak. Very bleak. Waiting for Superman is a documentary, and I'm not the world's biggest fan of documentaries. This, however, is everything a documentary should be. This is brilliantly done. It's about the broken educational system in America. Not that I think anybody doesn't know that there's something wrong with the educational system in America. It may be simplistic, and it may deal from a stacked deck, but it raises the right questions. And I don't think anybody will deny that the ending is a masterpiece of how to make a documentary suspenseful. Because what you have is, you know, you've got this thing where there are children who are on these waiting lists. Like there'll be 100 children applying to go to one school that has 30 openings. And so the only way that they can do this is by a lottery. So we followed several families, and then we intercut the lotteries of each one as they happen. And it just builds, you know, really maximum suspense as to, is this kid I've been following for 90 minutes going to get into a school, or is he not, or is she not? And it really is a very, very clever, to the point of brilliant, device for making the film effective. My biggest complaint with the film, other than the fact that it is a little simplistic, but it's an activist documentary, it's going to be a little simplistic and slammed, they all are. My biggest problem is, okay, I don't mind that you're going to tell me at the end of it that you should text this number to get involved in this, but after a while of being told to text here and call here and go to this website, I felt like I had spent an evening with somebody trying to get me to sell Amway. And it was kind of, you know, it was ultimately, that was off-putting, which is unfortunate because the film deserves to be seen. It probably will be seen because Jeffrey Canada has become quite well-known and quite famous as an educator and a reformer. He's been on television a good deal. So, I mean, it's going to have a draw that most documentaries want. It's by Davis Guggenheim, who got the Oscar for making An Inconvenient Truth, and then kind of took time off last year by coming out with It Might Get Loud, the guitarist documentary with Jimmy Page and The Edge and
Jack White.
Yeah. You can tell my age. Jimmy Page I know immediately. The Edge I kind of know. Jack White, well, yeah, okay. So. And then,
on the other side of the documentary.
On the other side of the documentary coin, because this is not a documentary. This is a 92-minute commercial for the Tea Party. It's called I Want Your Money. And it is made by and stars a man named Ray Griggs. It comes from Ray Griggs Entertainment, which is a peculiar name to attach to this company. Freestyle Releasing released it, but they don't put their name on it. There is no Freestyle logo on this movie, and I can understand that. In the first place, Ray Griggs thinks that he is Michael Moore. He makes Michael Moore look like the most amazing raconteur you have ever seen in your life. This guy is obnoxious, he is abrasive, he is offensive. And worse than that, he tends to talk like Sylvester the Cat without ever actually spraying. It is not a convincing way to get me to go along with your teabagger movement. It is beyond simple-minded. You want to talk about a stacked deck? His presidential timeline jumps from LBJ to Jimmy Carter. We have just sort of conveniently left out Messrs. Nixon and Ford like they never existed. And if this isn't enough, he also puts forth the interesting notion, which comes under the heading of, hey, dead folks can't argue the point, of deciding that if he were alive today, JFK would not be a Democrat. And then because they have no compelling right-wing figure to bring in, he has to bring Ronald Reagan back from the dead in a series of really overlong, really boring, and really unfunny, badly animated sequences involving Reagan lecturing an equally badly animated Obama on how Obamacare is going to lead to the path of socialism and destroy the entire country. This, of course, is coming from people whose notions of socialism have little basis in reality, although one of his talking heads assures me that socialism isn't scriptural. It was quite the most painful thing I have sat through all year. And it was certainly more depressing than Never Let Me Go, for obviously quite different reasons. Here's the thing. It can't even keep its own agenda straight. It can't keep what it is doing from one moment to the next straight. It ends with a boxing match between cartoon Reagan and cartoon Obama. It starts this boxing match by announcing that it will be Reagan in his prime versus Obama. There are no prizes for, you know, you're not getting anything out of me because you guess who won this. And then, at the end of it, after Reagan knocks Obama out, it makes a big issue about how the old guy beat up the young guy. So, is he in his prime, or is he the old guy? Actually, he's the dead guy, so out of the whole thing, it's sort of specious. But it is, it's amateurish, it's annoying, and it did so badly on three screens locally that by Friday morning, it won't be here anymore. And it couldn't happen to a nicer film.
We have Thursday.
Stuart Gordon's From Beyond.
Mm-hmm. For our Thursday Horror Picture Show.
Thursday Horror Picture Show, which is...
So it's follow-up to Reanimator.
Reanimator.
Jeffrey Combs is in it.
Jeffrey Combs stars this time, yes, as opposed to playing sort of second fiddle.
Though he really, I mean...
Yeah, but he made the first film, you know what I mean, but... Barbara Crampton is back. Mm-hmm.
It's another H.P. Lovecraft story.
Right, only this one actually follows an H.P. Lovecraft story pretty closely.
Okay.
Barbara Crampton does dress up in a dominatrix suit, but she does not suffer nearly the level of indignities that she does in Reanimator. It's probably a better horror film than Reanimator, but it's not quite as much fun.
No.
It's a little more straightforward. Losing the Bruce Abbott character from Reanimator may jockey Jeffrey Combs into the starring role, but it really doesn't give him a straight man to play off.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't give anybody to say really inane things like, Herbert, this has got to stop.
Right.
That's a downside right there, but it's a good-looking film.
Well, there's definitely more of a budget.
Oh, there's more of a budget, and that's also enhanced by shooting it in Italy rather than in Los Angeles, where you can get more for your money. Color scheme is very nice in it. Mm-hmm. And, it's a good... I would call it pretty much a solid classic of modern horror. It's not gonna... It won't get you as high as Reanimator, but it's certainly a worthy follow-up. And we're getting into the Halloween mode for next week's Asheville Film Society. We're showing the 1939 Bob Hope version of The Cat and the Canary, which is actually the film that made Bob Hope's career. And it's from the time period when Bob Hope was still good. It's actually a pretty close approximation of the 1922 stage play. And in a lot of respects, it's better, because the comedy that's written for Hope's character is not nearly as broad as the slapstick that is written for that play or that you see in the silent film for the same character. So, you know, it really is a... in many ways, it is the best version of this play. And it's partly by virtue of having been rewritten for Bob Hope. The names have been changed somewhat, too. There was no way they were going to... The character in the play and in the old films... that he plays is named Paul Jones, which is the name of another Paramount producer, so they obviously weren't going to call the character Paul Jones. So they call him Wally Campbell. I'm not sure why they change some of the other names. Oddly enough, they did keep the name for the lawyer, and they still refer to him as, I guess people did this in the 20s. They, you know, called you by your profession, and they refer to him as Lawyer Crosby, which is kind of odd to see a film with Bob Hope and somebody named Crosby, and there's no gag built around it. But Road to Singapore, which is what first teamed them, wasn't made till the next year, so there's no gag made, but it feels funny. But it's a pretty solid old dark house mystery. The reading of the will at midnight, and there's an escaped lunatic who crawls around on all fours like a cat, which Hope sums up by saying what some guys won't do for a laugh. And an heiress who's in peril, and it's a lot of fun, and the film is very smart in that it plays the last act straight, and its cat is such an improvement over the earlier cat. The earlier cat makeups are terrible. This is a makeup until it gets to the point where he has to take the mask off, and at which point you can tell that it's a mask. And other than that, it's a makeup, and it's a really good makeup. It's scary, and it's a really nice blend of comedy and thrills, and it's not shown very often. In fact, for a long time it wasn't shown at all, so it's only recently become generally available again. Watch it while you can before it becomes unavailable again, because these things sometimes are cyclical.
We have three films this week. Well, you have three films.
I have three films because a certain particular party is abandoning
fleeing
me to go.
It's not like there's anything awful. It's
have his New York adventure.
Something awful looking this week.
He's going to come back and be all New Yorker-ish.
Eat bagels.
He'll be constantly eating bagels with lox. That'll be. I want to see that.
Okay. But speaking of which, there's a new Woody Allen picture.
Yes, there's a new Woody Allen picture this week, which is one of his London-made films, though. It has a wonderful cast. It's got Anthony Hopkins, Antonio Banderas, Naomi Watts,
Josh Brolin.
I feel like we're leaving somebody out.
Probably.
Well, we're leaving Frida Pinto out from Slumdog Millionaire. And, of course, we're leaving out Gemma Jones, who audiences now probably best know for playing Bridget Jones' mother. You say Gemma Jones to me, and I think that she's Madeline DeBrew in Ken Russell's The Devils, but that was 40 years ago.
Right.
So, you know, that's probably doesn't really help right. most people, especially since you can't really see the devils these days. It's gotten about a 50-50 split in terms of reviews. For me, I'm giving it the benefit of the doubt because it is a Woody Allen picture, and in a lot of respects to me, it's not really a question of whether a Woody Allen picture in terms of reviews is good or bad. It depends on whether or not you're in tune with the kind of film Woody Allen makes. If you are, you'll probably like it. If you're not, you probably won't. I'm expecting to like it. I could be wrong. I expect to like Match Point, and I hated it. But this is apparently at least partly humorous. And usually when I hate Woody Allen, it's when he tries to be completely serious. So it's definitely what I'm looking forward to this Friday. And apparently it does actually involve a fake psychic fortune teller who does predict you will meet a tall, dark stranger at one point to the Gemma Jones character, who instead, I believe, meets a short, fat, balding gentleman. So much for the abilities of phony psychics. But then we have
Clint Eastwood.
Clint Eastwood's Hereafter.
Which, to me, looks dreadful.
I'm curious about it because it's something Clint Eastwood has never done. He's never done anything supernatural. So that I'm curious about in that respect.
But it looks so
stiff.
Corny. Like, I'm a psychic, and then it's
a curse. I can't stand being a psychic. Yeah, I
and then it's just this sort of like
this is not a blessing. It's a curse. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, I will grant you that. I will also note that more than one.
I'm also not convinced that Eastwood's not senile.
Well,
it might make it hilarious.
Apparently, one critic says that all the acting is really stiff and bad, except for Bryce Dallas Howard, who is just totally inept and the only breath of fresh air in the film. And I will have to say that Eastwood has had at least three critics that I've read compare him in this film to M. Night Shyamalan. Now, that's a horrible thing to say about anybody.
Especially the elderly.
Especially the elderly, yes. So, I mean, and that's about as cold as it can get.
That makes me want to
watch
it now.
At the same time,
because I did not like Gran Torino. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, well, exactly. But I think this is going to be a lot slower than Gran Torino. This is, I think, Clint being serious. So bear that in mind. I'm still curious. I'm still interested. And I'm certainly more interested than I am in seeing Paranormal Activity 2, about which we know absolutely nothing, except that it's the same kind of thing, and Kate Featherstone is back from the first film. Whoopee.
Do we have tiny-footed demons stomping around the house?
We have a trailer that shows you nothing. We have no stills from the film. We have no real plot synopsis.
That dog barking. It's a dog. There's a dog in the movie.
There's a dog in the movie.
And a baby crib.
Yeah, there's a baby crib. Yeah, I can see that in the trailer.
Maybe the dog has...
of course, the whole thing is meant to
be
taking place on...
That would be a brilliant way to save money. It's just have a dog and a baby.
Yeah, oh, that's true.
In a room.
And then they manipulate the image by putting scary faces or something. Apparently, if you sit there and fool around with the trailer online, you can find hidden images.
You find Mel Gibson's face?
I don't know. I'm not interested
enough
to do this. I mean, you know, the first film was kind of creepy. I understood that. I didn't understand why everybody thought it was terrifying.
I thought it was boring and pointless.
Well, parts of it were boring.
I
will grant you that.
I like somebody.
It was not that bad. Maybe it's because I expected it to be absolutely horrible.
I read somebody on the internet saying that all that movie proved is what guys will do for a girlfriend with big boobs.
Well, there you go. See, there's a moral.
My favorite part.
Perhaps there'll be a moral to this.
My favorite part is they have this demon stomping around the house the whole time.
Yeah.
And then when you see his footprints in the baby powder, whatever, his tiny little feet.
He's heavy.
Tiny little. He's just clopping around.
But he's weighty. He's weighty. He's just a little feet.
Uh-huh.
Very delicate feet.
I imagine Louis Anderson.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, is he barefoot when he's stomping around?
I think so.
Well, that's sort of dangerous. And something of that shape, you would think, might without his shoes,
right,
he might just float up in the air. So I don't know. But whatever, it is my lot to see this. Paramount is, of course, hoping that this $1.98's worth of production values will once again give Saw a black eye when the new Saw picture opens next week.
The traps come alive.
Yes, the traps come alive in 3D for the really no-shit final chapter, which I'll believe that when I see it, although it probably will just get rebooted.
Do they ever explain what's in the box?
Yeah, it wasn't very interesting.
Oh, yeah, it was like...
Yeah, it was...
Postcards.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was like jacks and a ball and something, I don't know. It wasn't interesting, I remember that.
It wasn't Gwyneth Paltrow's head.
No, I was hoping it was Gwyneth Paltrow's head. That would have been that would have been a shocker.
Yeah, I would have been surprised.
Yeah, that would have been a surprise.
Never saw that coming.
No, especially if we just, you know, move the cameras where he pans, you know, up the front and then cranes down to look in the box and it's Gwyneth Paltrow's head. I would like that. Anyway, I think Paramount is going to come a cropper with this one because I really think that I don't see the interest. I don't hear the interest. There's some internet interest in it, but all I have to say to you in terms of internet interest is snakes on a plane.
They'll make money off it because it
They'll make money off it because it didn't cost anything, but I don't think it will beat out Saw 3D next weekend. which is what Paramount is really hoping to do.
We'll see, I guess.
We'll see. Of course, Saw 3D will also have the inflated
3D
gross because of the 3D charge.
Well, when they get Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
3D.
Paranormal Activity 3D. Wow. I have to go somewhere now and contemplate that concept. So I guess that's it for this week.
Yes, yes. I'm Justin. You're Ken.
He's Justin. I'm Ken. The Mountain Express are the fine folks who bring this to you. Shanafelt is the gentleman who produces, coheres, and otherwise manages to sit through this crap. And I guess that 50% of us will be back next week. Since Mr. Souther, Wednesday. Oh, well, I suppose we could do it on Wednesday.
Maybe.
No, Mr. Souther is.
We might have a clip show.
Oh, that's true. Well,
we'll
figure something out. Or I'm going to bring a dummy and set it on the chair next to me, and it can be Justin for the. If I had a ventriloquist dummy, that would be really aces. I could tell you I do, and since this has no pictures, you could believe me. Or not.
You should do that, actually.
Well, I can try. Okay. You know, I can drink a glass of water and talk for you simultaneously.